What is joy? Truly, when you think about living in a place of pure joy, unadulterated presence, what occurs to you? And how often are you in that state? Hey y'all, I'm Reese, and welcome to Making Meaning. Making Meaning is a podcast by the Cohere Collective here to help guide you along your path to making meaning in a way that makes sense for you. This week, I am joined by life coach and founder of Coco Joy Coaching, Nicole Pignatello. Nicole is a seasoned expert in joy. This is what she does. This is her bread and butter. She helps people define what joy means to them and live lives chasing after it. I very much appreciate her approach to life because it seems very similar to mine, except where she uses the word joy, I use the word purpose. And I think that perhaps joy and purpose can be interchangeable. So you can probably see why I find so much inspiration in her and her work. If this is your first time here at the Cohere Collective and or Making Meaning, welcome. We are so glad that you are here. And please subscribe wherever you are listening and or watching. YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or someplace else. Subscribing is the best way that you can support the work that Cohere and Making Meaning is doing. So that would mean a whole heck of a lot, as well as leaving a 5-star rating and or review and giving us a thumbs up or a like wherever you may be consuming this content. I think that is all I have for you. I don't want to front load this episode too much. So, as always, let's take a deep breath. And jump into it. Nicole, thank you so much for being here with me today and joining me for this conversation. I am truly, truly so excited to have you on the podcast and to be here with you this morning.
I'm thrilled to be here and I really appreciate this time with you and the opportunity to chat.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Of course, of course, of course. The first question I like to ask, just to try and set a good note for the conversation we're about to have, is what is one thing you're thankful for right now?
Back in February, I had back surgery, major back surgery. So I've been on a medical leave, and I'm really grateful for it, actually, not just for the physical healing, but for the time I've been able to just really enjoy life and in some ways live my best life and spend time with my kids and, rest and find that feeling of sort of groundedness. So I am so grateful for this time off.
Yeah. No, I think that is so important. And like you said, rest is so rare to find. We live in such a fast-paced society and a hurry up and wait. And so even though, of course, having serious surgery is scary, it's also a silver lining that you get to have that little piece of something in there too, right?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, it's been a great experience.
Second question to just kind of open up and we'll see where it takes us is, what is your story? Obviously a big question. Whatever you feel called to share in this moment is perfect. Yes, whatever feels right is right.
Oh, my story. Oh, which, if you want the juicy story? No, I'm just kidding.
I want the juicy story.
You want the juicy story. Okay. So I'll just start talking and see what happens, but cause it's, there's the work life and they intersect and, So I currently live in Massachusetts. I've been here since 99, went to school in North Carolina, and I was born and raised in San Diego, which is my home and where I dream of being again someday. My life has been very full and has taken many twists and turns. I have a JOB, but I also have my consulting and coaching business, which I love and is around joy. And maybe we'll get to that in a little bit. But I moved here to take a job and ended up staying here for, like I said, many years since 99. I got married, had children, and did a lot of different career things. I like to say I have a varied and colorful skill set. And, you know, most of my life, I've tried to figure out how it all fits together and trying to figure out, I don't want to say my purpose, but like, what am I supposed to do in my career? And I was also a stay-at-home mom part of those years and balanced some work with that. And but through it all, up until this point, everything I've done has led me here. And the skills, the lessons, the challenges, the triumphs to this point, and I'm sure there's more to come, but at this point, I feel very wise in a lot of ways, but like I said, certainly some more lessons, lifelong learner over here. So now I'm currently, like I said, I'm doing coaching, and it's focused around joy and finding joy or experiencing joy in life and work. And you know, that's pretty broad, but you know, I find that I work a lot with people who are in transitions of life events, you know, struggling with identity as far as like, what do I do next and what's my purpose? I've also found a little bit of success in leadership mindset and helping folks that are in manager, CEO, C-suite levels, roles, just shift a little bit in, you know, better ways to lead teams and people or themselves. I have this belief that I think we all are leaders. And so we all could use some leadership mindset in all the things we do, whether it's at work, communities, families, whatnot. So those are my specialties at the moment. We'll see how those transition. But so I'm still in Massachusetts. I am actually divorced also. I had a big life transition, so I've had a lot of personal experience with big changes in life. And, you know, through it all, there is joy in all of it.
Yes, and, absolutely.
I kind of, you know, I like the analogy of the lotus. You know, the lotus grows in the murk. And I think joy is also created in the murk. I don't think joy is happiness. I think joy is, it's a lot of things, but I think it's in the journey and it's not the result.
One of my questions that I wanted to dive into was, how would you define joy? And then of course you took us right there, which is so beautiful. And I do love this, the image of the lotus flower, like in the dirt, in the grime, in the rough and tumble of daily life is where joy blooms. Why do you think that is? Because I have to agree with you that it is different from happiness. Happiness is that fleeting, like good feeling we get, right? But joy is this long-term commitment to choosing joyfulness, right? Why does it arise throughout the journey? And is there anything else besides that kind of lotus flower image that you would add to your definition of joy?
I love that. Thank you for that's a beautiful image and the way you set that up. That's it. That's joy. So joy is in the journey because you said it. It's a choice. or a mindset shift or a noticing. And it doesn't have to be this grand event or experience. It can be very small. And I think it's tied, you know, some people experience joy in different ways, but when people are stuck and are not feeling joyful in their journey, one of the things that helps us just change the station, so to speak, in the mind is just gratitude. And you started us off with gratitude. I think that's big, even if it's just a moment to pause and be like, okay, this sucks right now that I'm going through. What is something? It could be as simple as like, I'm grateful I took a shower today. Like, it just can be super simple. So, you know, I think it's a choice. I think it's when you find the joy in the murk, it's helps you continue on too. So there's some motivating push, or assurance of that you're going to be okay, hopefulness, you know, all these things are tied to it. And I do think I've had moments in my own life where I've just been joyful. Like there wasn't, there wasn't this contemplative piece to it or like, let me pause and be gratitude. It's just been like, oh, I feel joyful and my life sucks right now. And I don't know, maybe that's a muscle that we develop. Maybe that's, you know, something that we have to, like, we, you know, have to build our physical muscles. It's a muscle we develop.
Right.
I think some might be set up more for that, you know, naturally, and others might need a little bit more guidance in it.
Totally. One of the words you used in describing joy was noticing. Right? That sometimes it does arise and it's there. We're just not paying attention to the fact that it's there, or we're maybe moving so fast that we're just not looking at it. In those moments of noticing that you've had in your life where it's like, okay, we're in the murk. We are going through it right now. And yet I'm still noticing joy. What do you think it was that allowed you to notice it in those moments?
That's a really good question. So a few things come to mind. Awareness, it's a sense, right? For me, it's a sense in my body. It's a feeling. And it's like, oh, even though I'm really struggling and I'm feeling negative feelings about a situation or whatnot, there's something that happens that, you know, a friend calls or my kids show up and, you know, or just something that kind of takes you out of that mindset. And so just the sense, the awareness, you know, being able to, I think, again, it's kind of like being able to notice it and be aware of it. Because sometimes that's just enough to flip the switch. The other piece of it is, and this is for me and, you know, for others, I believe there's something greater than myself that's, you know, helping me along this earth school that we are in. And so for me, sometimes it's just being in connection with that. And, you know, sometimes for me, I'm a verbal processor. And I have, you know, friends that I can call and people I can touch base with and talk through things to help me kind of land where I need to land. And one of those ways is also through whatever is bigger than us, God, goddess, universe, however language you choose to use. And so like sometimes for me, like I'm not a big like sit down and meditation and contemplative prayer, which is super valuable. And I'm so jealous of people that can really do that as a full practice. I go in and out of waves of it, but like simple, like driving in my car and be like, just having a conversation, and it might be like talking to myself in some ways, but to me, I'm talking to something bigger than myself. And that to me is prayer, and also part of finding the joy of, you know, acknowledging whatever it is that's going on, which might be another piece to the joy of just like, you know, I think we're wired for whatever reasons, culture, upbringing, what to push away emotion that doesn't feel good. And I've learned, and again, still practicing, that you got to sit in the emotion. You got to feel the feels in order to move through them and heal from them. I think, you know, there's all sorts of modalities that really exemplify this and speak to this. You know, cognitive behavior theory is one of them. But a lot of these modalities of supporting people is being in the feelings. Yeah. And sometimes that's where the joy is like being in the feelings, giving it a little bit of a voice to come to the table, so to speak. But then it's done its job. It's time to move on, or it's time to, you know, allow that feeling to surface, acknowledge it, and then what can we do with it? And sometimes it varies per person. Sometimes people need to write. Sometimes people just need to acknowledge it. Sometimes people need to physically run, or, you know, there's all sorts of ways to process feelings. So
100%. Well, and I do think that even in your answer, there's such a beautiful picture that you're painting of these kind of varied approaches that we can all merge together to create this kind of like spider webbing picture of practicing joy and what works for us. And I love that you acknowledge that you're like, a meditation practice is not the thing that works for me every day. You know, there are certain things that will not work, even though it is the thing that people are talking about. And like, you brought up gratitude journals are like very hot button topic in this kind of space, but some people are just not into journaling. It is just not what works for them. And so I think acknowledging what is working for you is so important, and it's okay that it looks different, because like you said, we're all wired differently, and appreciating the difference of that and the fact that, you know, some people may try meditation and journaling and neither of those work, and it's like, well, I'm broken, I just won't ever feel joy. It's like, no, nothing to do with exactly. It's no, let's keep experimenting and trying and reaching for these different things. And if that includes this higher power, if that includes community, if that includes art, right? There's so many different pieces that we can paint into this portrait of creating and choosing joy for ourselves. And I just love that. I love it. And I love your honesty with that too. It's so beautiful.
Well, you summarized it beautifully too. So that was great. Yeah.
Thank you. One thing that I want to ask you about, in the very beginning, when I asked you about your story, you said you do have a job. and I want to talk about that a little bit, because of course now you have your own business, coaching and consulting and helping people with their joy and their purpose and their transitions. Why do you categorize those two professions as slightly different in your mind, right? Like, what's the distinction there?
Oh, it's probably very telling about me. Like, why I put both of them in totally two separate categories or boxes.
I love it.
I think before I could fully answer that, a little bit of background of my business, Coco Joy Coaching, is a relaunch. And before then, it was a different name and similar coaching, but encompassed a lot of different things, facilitation, which is also something that I love doing, group facilitation. And I worked, I did some post-parenting when moms were transitioning to parenthood a lot, worked for a company that helped moms, supported moms through that. I guess This is, you're really touching on my work right now, which is good and a little uncomfortable.
Thank you.
But I'm going to answer the question because it's like, it's part of this experience and it's very good. And it's pretty raw and honest of and transparent of who I am, I think. So I, for now, compartmentalize the two. My J-O-B is a means to an end. It provides tangible things that are necessary in our current culture. And while that, while the business builds and continues to build, it is my stability. And who knows what the transition will be at some point. It might be that, you know, coaching, consulting becomes my stability. But for now, it's separate or in tangent with the J-O-B. And I will say, I'm one of these people that likes to have a lot of things going on. I have a lot of interests, and that's been a blessing and a curse. I've been this way my entire life. For those that are Enneagram fans, I am 7. There you go. There it is. And you know, it used to be, I used to deny a lot of that, those parts of myself that are like, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. And, over the years I've learned, let's do this, but let's think about it before we jump in. So, slowing down that little restless being that is inside of me. But so even if one were happening fully, I would probably be doing something else.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's like, there's this tangible, practical explanation. And then there's this, well, my personality is such that I do like to have, I like the juggle. Yeah. And I complain about the juggle too, but I seem to like it. It's a yes right. And for me.
Right. I know. I love that because I do think that that is something that we all kind of have in this, especially in, you know, call it the West, call it America, but this attraction to the juggle for different experiences and wanting to stay busy. And I even find myself like in moments of silence, like, okay, pop on a podcast, like, let's make use of this time. When it's like, actually, it's okay to sit in silence for a bit. And so I appreciate the honesty there, but also the fact that there is this piece of you that it's feeding, that while you've learned to kind of balance the desires with what serves you long term, there is still something in feeding that piece of yourself that I think is worthwhile. One thing that you said in talking about it was that, you know, it also provides the stability. Having a J-O-B provides a stability that is in alignment with kind of our current society and culture. And, you know, operating financially is, of course, such a big question within that. You've shared this personal take for you, which I so appreciate, but I would love to hear your opinions on what that means for our broader society and culture as a whole, because even baked into it's what we need in this society and culture is almost this, please don't let me put words in your mouth, but wish for a shift in what that could potentially look like one day eventually. But also I think speaks to something that a lot of us are really feeling and experiencing right now, which is this tug of war between the feeling of indulgence that seems to come with passion, even though it's not like hedonistic, it's actually very vital and important to our health and well-being personally and culturally, but it feels kind of icky to chase that when there is this other side that is, okay, but what's practical? What makes sense? How am I going to put food on the table? How am I going to keep a roof over my head? Like those very basic, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of things, right? Talk to me about it.
Yeah, good question. A couple of things came to mind. And like, a lot of this is not going to be figured out. And I'm air quoting for those that are listening. I'm like, oh, right. These are listeners. They can't see my sarcastic motions.
Right.
my tone sometimes. I don't know if we'll see the big change in our lifetime, or at least my lifetime. I think you're a little bit younger than I am, but, and you know, it's, I've thought about this on different types of issues. And not that this is when you're talking, I'm thinking, okay, in some ways this is the conversation that we have around mental health wellness. Mm. And in our culture, right? Our culture, meaning the West and US and maybe even globally. I, you know, this is where I'm from and this is where I live and this is my lived experience here. So, yeah. And in some ways we've come a long way, you know, and I love that we have big name people, celebrities setting examples and having conversations, and it's the Olympics are going on. So Simone Biles comes to mind and, you know, and even, you know, the honesty of her and other athletes that kind of lead by, I mean, you know, being an elite athlete is terribly taps into that mental health, right? And in good and in also negative ways where, you know, pressure is good, but too much pressure leads us to other things and, you know, and physically can manifest. Anyway, so there is this kind of cultural mental health wellness conversation. And I think that helps. Again, it's kind of a piece of the pie. So in some ways, there's this systematic shift that hopefully will continue. In my opinion, I'd love it to go a little faster. But in some ways, I feel like, okay, good job, us. We're getting there. We're getting there. So let's celebrate the wins and celebrate what's good and find the joy in it, right? Joyful that we have these things that are happening. And, you know, also there are counter experiences that are happening, and definitely don't want to dive into the political, you know, weather right now, but that has a global or national weight on everybody, wherever you stand. That's a heaviness. So mental health, I think, is really important. So there's this kind of broader bird's eye view, systematic shift that I think would be lovely for us to continue moving forward around mindset, self-care, and such. And then there's this inner work. And I think this is true for most issues. Like, we can squeak and complain and stuff, but there is a bigger campaign that we need to do, but there's also an inner campaign that's, I think, important to anything that we do that where we want to change or shift. And so that inner work, I think, is important. With that, one of the things in our culture that I've been having, it's so strange, I've been having this conversation with multiple people, is this shame around self-care or shame around slowing down. We have a constant, consistent message of what success looks like. And it's either a financial success, a status success, which creates pressure. Again, like, there's something good about that in some ways. And yet there is, it's like the pendulum swinging too far, you know, like, where can we find the pendulum in a calm, neutral state? And, you know, kind of cliche is too much of anything, I think, can be harmful. Yeah. But how do we have that mindset of, I'm going to slow down, I'm going to rest and potentially be judged by others and thyself, right? I should be, it's the shoulds, like, oh, I should be throwing another load of laundry in. I should be going for that run. I should be spending more more time with my children. I should be. And yes, all of those things might be true. But if we got to a place where, let me just check in and see, like, what is my being need in this moment? Do I have the energy, the capacity to give to these things? Maybe my body just needs to lie down for 10 minutes, like, you know, yeah. Or maybe I just need to go for a walk around the block, or maybe I need to sit and journal for 2 minutes, or maybe I, whatever it is, simple, easy, quick, long, lengthy, whatever. And kind of back full circle back to what we were talking about before, like, it doesn't have to be some grand gesture or some grandiose thing. It can be just a simple thing. But anyway, can we turn the shame, whether you're externally doing that or internally doing that, so that we can rest, have peace, have calm, notice joy in the murk. And, you know, this journey of my back issue, which it's funny, not funny, because I had been dealing with lower back pain for years, and still being very active, running crazy races. I play old lady soccer, we call it, and still continued to do it. And got used to the pain. I knew it was in pain, but it was just so normalized. But it wasn't, you know, this surgery slowed me down. I was forced to listen to my body and pay attention to the physicalness, but also the mental, because the mental part was also challenging, of like laying down and not being able to do, asking for help. Hello. That was a biggie.
Yep. Well, and I think even in what you're just saying, like, we get used to the pain, right? And this example of your back, it is a physical pain. But also, if we take that as kind of like a microcosm of this bigger systemic kind of process that we have going on, we are used to the quote unquote pain of rushing, of being in fight or flight, of not slowing down. And that kind of just, our status quo has become fight or flight, as opposed to rest and noticing joy and process. And even though it's there through everything, there is a certain requirement of kind of pushing back against that pain to embrace what is actually there. And going back to something you said earlier, feel the feels as opposed to pushing right past them.
Feel the feels.
Feel the feels.
I feel like I need a trucker hat that says feel the feels.
yeah. Just tattoo it right there, or sticky note right on your forehead.
Yeah.
One thing I want to talk about too, if you're comfortable, is having this conversation, knowing that you're a mom. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's such a big piece of this puzzle, both societally, but also personally too, in that what a beautiful, important, big job mom is, mm-hmm. right? I am not a mom, so I do not understand it, but as someone who is very close to my mom and, believes in the strength of women maybe more than anything, I just have so much admiration for people that actively choose to be a piece of cultivating future humans. And I think it's so beautiful, but certainly adds some layers to the go, 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 and the to-do list that we feel like we need to check off, and even more expectations that we here societally, but also internally, about what does a good mom look like? Mm-hmm. What would I feel like is the bar for a good mom? And I'm sure there's other pieces to that too that I just am not even thinking about because I haven't experienced it, that I would love to hear from you about how that aspect of your day-to-day and identity plays into this.
Yeah, such a good question commentary, Reese. And you're tapping into my old days of the mom stuff, so when I was doing the mom support work. Yeah, so I love being a mom. I knew from when I was very young I wanted to be a mama. And so kind of in some ways that I knew early on that was, you know, some people are like, I want to be a blah, blah, blah when I grow up. I was like, I always knew I wanted to be a mama. And certainly the greatest job and joy of my life are my children. And I'd like to say that I've contributed to their goodness and their, I think, they're pretty fabulous people. They're definitely my favorite people.
I love that.
I'm also their mom. And, you know, I'm sure they're at the phase in life where they're one's a young adult and one is a teenager. And I have girls, you know, women. And so your question is very, speaks to my heart and is very relevant to my situation. But they're amazing women, and they're going to continue to be amazing women, whatever they end up doing in their life. And I think, you know, I have so many thoughts on what you said. So, you know, I hope I've done a good job in raising strong women. But it's also life has to bring them experience to continue to build those muscles. And, you know, I think one of the hardest things about parenting is see your children fall or fail. Mm. And yet it's such a good life experience for them to have. And hopefully, you know, a good mom is somebody who just loves and supports them through whatever it is that they're going through. And that looks different for different people. It's honestly, I mean, we're all different humans. So one formula doesn't work for every single parent. You know, it's, I used to say to my mom's groups, like, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff in these groups. Some stuff's going to resonate. Some of it's not. Take what's yours and leave the rest. Like, yeah, you know, judgment-free zone. We're all going to do things a little different. And, you know, if we also discover a new way of doing something, let's share that because it might work for some, you know. So it's the mom world is super, super judgy, you know, and there are many ways to parent, and, you know, as long as you're not harming your children, you know, and you're providing love and support, I think, you know, it's okay to be different in how you parent or how you mom or whatnot. And the moms do, I mean, the mom world, and maybe because mom job is so important, we self-inflict that shame because we want to do such a good job and we want to be the best mom ever. So that is, again, a lot of pressure to,
yeah.
And that's not, I just want to say, I'm not giving license to be a terrible mom or
no.
do horrible things. Of like I'm sort of speaking to like, you know, And part of being a good mom is being aware of your own stuff. Parenting is a place where we do a lot of projecting. We do a lot of reliving of our own upbringing. And sometimes we have to stop behaviors or stop ancestral lineage of beliefs. Or, you know, I believe that there is also ancestral trauma that gets imprinted on our DNA and our cells, and that gets passed down. And I mean, that's a definitely a woo-woo world thing. Well, maybe not. I think there's some science behind it too, but you know, and it's also, this is a whole other kind of, but that's also what I think has contributed to the issues around race and health around people of color and whatnot. But that's a whole other conversation. And I'm not an expert. I'm just from what I've gathered. Anyway, and it's probably not my place to speak to that. So, but in regards to just everybody, right? We all have cells. We all have DNA. You know, I think some of that gets passed down if we can break some of the unhealthy things and continue the healthier things and learn and add to it. You know, the parenting journey it's an exciting one. I will say, and there's been different phases in my kids' upbringing that I've enjoyed more than other times. There are phases of parenthood that just flat out suck. even when they're fabulous kids.
Right.
And I am not going to say what those phases are because they're probably different for each person. Yeah. But in that, and I, again, used to do this with my mom's group, there are phases in that first year. I feel like the first year there's just transition. And like, once you get through something, there's like this exhale, like, oh, I did it. I made it through. And I would encourage my moms to like, to celebrate that. Like, you made it through the diaper phase, or you made it through the feeding, you know, through the night phase, or you made it through sleep deprivation. Like, it's sort of those moments of celebrating, finding the joy, right? We did it. And there was a point, and I've totally lost my point, but let's see.
You're good.
I had so many thoughts flying in my brain. It was just like,
No, I love it.
Give me one second, because I think I can get back there. Again, glimpse into my brain. You're welcome. Let's see. We were talking about the phases, the exhales, and then parenting's hard, phases stink. Totally gone. You can just cut that part out.
That is okay. No worries. There's so many good thoughts and points built into everything you just said too. One thing I'll throw out there is we also touched on the like self-inflicted shame piece. Yeah. I don't know if that triggers anything there. But as someone who, again, is not a mother, but can only imagine through like caring so deeply about other people in my life, what it feels like to care on such another level. That is like, I on almost a daily basis am worried about how I'm treating my friends, and am I being a good friend? Am I being a good daughter? Am I being a good sister? Am I all of these things? Times a million to being a mom, right? And that self-inflicted, but also societally inflicted pressure, but also hope of what we would want. And yet there has to be space for falling short. And it's so one of those things, because you know when you fall short, someone else is on the other end of it, and it feels like it's unacceptable to do that. However, it has to be okay, right? Because this is something I'm working on in like my friendships, is that relationships are resilient. Your friendships should not be built to break. They're built to bend and flex as you fall short. And if you put your foot in your mouth and all of these things, like that's accidentally hurting your friend's feeling, should not be the end of a friendship. The same way that you have no idea what memory is going to stick with your kid, but one mistake, one bad moment does not a bad mom make, right? Mm-hmm. And in the same way that in friendships, I mean, again, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I do not want to speak out of turn in this by any means. But I do feel like in friendships, like the quality of my relationships, I can usually measure through how the repair is done, not how often a mistake happens, but how that person shows up when we hurt each other. And it seems like the same might be true of moms, where it's not if you fall short or you make a mistake or an imperfection happens. It's how do you talk about that with your kids? How do you show up and say, mom was angry and hangry and I needed a beat and let's talk about what happened? Like, because that's also teaching all of these beautiful things to your kids too, of like, this happens to everyone. What should you do when you're going through that too?
Yeah. I think so. A few things come to mind. Spot on. Like there's this, like, the recovery, the making mistakes. We're human. We are flawed. We're designed to make some mistakes. We're designed to love also. And again, I think there's been, I don't know when it happened, but there was a shift in, you know, being perfect. And we can't fail. We can't fail. We can't, you know, we have to be perfect. And again, I think it's culturally an inner work that contributes to that. So this is leading me to, like, this other thing that I feel really strongly about, is culturally, and I'm bold, I'm going to say this is a cultural issue, individual issue, but, like, big cultural issue, is we forgot how to forgive. And it doesn't mean we forget, and it doesn't mean we have to forgive. It's not even forgiveness, it's grace. Let me change that. We have forgotten grace. And there are situations where I was brought up but there was messaging in my young life around evangelical Christianity where there was this pressure to forgive and forget. And as I got older, I deconstructed that and have new sort of opinions about that. The grace is not lost. Like, and I'm still struggling. Like, this is my work also. Like, how do we give grace when somebody wrongs us? Or how do we ask for grace when we've wronged somebody else? And I think depending on the circumstance, there are situations where things are traumatic or violent. I don't know if we need to forgive our perpetrators or people who have caused harm. But for the things that make us human, where we have to learn lessons of forgiveness, grace, repair, and healing, then we need that component, that grace to work through it, you know, and on either end, whether you're a receiver or a giver of harm or, you know, some sort of issue in a relationship, you have to feel the feels. Like, you have to own up, you have to take responsibility, accountability, and then be able to genuinely repair it. And I think culturally we've lost that skill. Is it a skill?
Yeah. I would argue, yes, I do think it is, that so often I think it's much easier to say, oh, I'll just let it roll off my back and move on because I don't want to go there. Right. So easy to do that and then be like, but I'm good. I can get over it. When that is when we see this, like, years long resentment, I think, build up. And a lot of that is in not wanting to be a problem, not wanting to own our needs in a relationship of maybe it is a trigger from something that it's like, I recognize that I am not being fully rational when I say this thing you said hurt my feelings, but I still need to own that it hurts my feelings. And I think it's really hard to tell someone when they hurt us. And I think that that has to be the first piece of that, right? Like, you can't have grace for someone if you're not having this, like, exchange in even the word, like, repair and healing that you're using. I mean, it makes me think of, like, we can't put Neosporin and a Band-Aid on a scrape until we acknowledge that the scrape is there. And then it'll get infected and fester, and that's not good.
Or maybe even give a little bit of, like, oh, I'm so sorry you got scraped. Are you, you know, like, some, you know, compassion, right? There's got to be some compassion in there. And then we can, it's, you know, it, I mean, this is very, I feel like this is very, I forget the word, but, like, I mean, I feel like this topic entails a lot of layers and we're kind of just scratching the surface of it. I think, you know, to summarize it or to put it simply, it's how can we find, like, how can we bring grace back into these relationships or situations, because sometimes it's not even a relationship, it's the situation that's happening. And how do you, you know, internally, externally, you know, allow for grace and forgiveness. Again, I think this is a whole other conversation. And in that, there is joy, right? If we sit in the feeling, feel like crap because we hurt somebody's feelings or did some wrong, and we're able to work to sit and feel and examine and figure out maybe not necessarily why, but maybe why, and then take responsibility and then be the initiator of the repair. Like that's hard, you know, be the initiator of, I'm sorry. And I know I hurt you, or that's hard to do nowadays. I mean, it's hard to do period, but I just feel like there's a little extra oomph that makes it harder now. Because I think there's a lot more judgment that we experience. Mm-hmm. So the fear kind of takes over, but man, if we can overcome that fear, how wonderful. And then we repair and we, you know, there's something joyful in the thought of that journey of, because I believe whether it's circumstance or a relationship, once you work through something, there's some added benefit or something more that happens in that relationship that is a blessing and, or that is good, you know?
Totally. Well, it's like, the callus metaphor, right? I keep going to all these metaphors, but it's like when you hurt something and it grows back stronger because you've been through it, you know how to withstand this. There's a tool in your tool belt as a relationship that now you know you have the ability to use together, that you're stronger than just being happy hour friends. You are friends that can get past a really hard thing. And I do think that in terms of this kind of cultural conversation, there's so much here. but I think grace also requires time. And this conversation also requires time, and goes back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, that settling into doing this work requires acknowledging our imperfections and requires slowing down. And those are the two things that I think are really hard for us to do, and perhaps go into this kind of why it's gotten harder and harder for us to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't love that, but I love what you're saying as far as time. Time is absolutely part of that process. And sometimes it takes years and decades, and sometimes it takes, you know, a minute. We just don't know.
Yeah.
I want to say one other thing about friendships, because you brought it up, or relationships in general. And that is my experience is there are friendships that are, and this is totally cliche, but I think it's so
cliche
good.
For a reason.
Is there are friendships that are there for a season, and friendships that are there for a reason. And I am somebody, and not everybody is like this. I value my friendships highly. I've created very strong friendships my entire life, and I value them. So I put a lot of effort in cultivating those to be long lasting. And for a long time, up until probably recently, I've expected that in return and have not received it in return in all situations, and have had to grieve the loss of certain people shifting in my life. And some of those people have exited and some of those people have stayed, but we've had to just redefine, or I redefine, you know?
Yeah.
And I, again, I'm speaking, this is something in my personal life that I value, and I've created, right? This is just part of my personality. I love people in my life. I love being in relationship with people. And so those are things that I give energy. As you can imagine, over the years, it's exhausting. And so it also makes sense that some friendships have to kind of move along or, you know, or shift or whatnot. And in that, there is a grieving process too, you know. But in your speaking to friendship, I just, you know, some of these friendships are lifelong, some are short term, and some just pop in and pop out, you know. Yeah. And they're for a reason, right? To teach you something, to have you experience something. Hopefully they're all healthy friendships for the most part.
Right, ideally.
Not all are.
But yeah, and I just think that's so true. And it's such a good reminder too, because there is such an emphasis on some different than the pressure that's put on moms, absolutely. But there is a different cultural pressure in terms of like, what does being a good friend look like? And to feel like we are falling short on friendship, or that we have an expectation that isn't matching up with someone else's expectation. It's like these things sometimes need to be spoken and brought into the forefront of these relationships in order to understand that. And there's also such a pressure, and maybe this is totally me projecting something, could be, but to have like lifelong perfect friendships. And growing up in school, I hopped around schools a lot. It's hard to maintain friendships when you are not in the same school with someone. It's hard to maintain high school friends when you go to college, and college friends when you move to a different city, and those friends when you – single friends when you get married, or married friends if you are entering through a different life transition, or parent friends if you're not having a kid, right? Like all of these different things that can feel like, oh, this is something we don't have in common anymore. And acknowledging that that's okay. And when mm-hmm. people exit our lives, that's normal. It is normal for the terms of a relationship to be redefined. And I think there is this stronghold on wanting our relationships to stay the same, because we love them and we love these people. And I love mm-hmm. this relationship and this friendship that I have, and I want it to stay this way forever. But it can't. And that's grace for that person in the relationship. It's also grace for yourself and recognizing how your needs shift and change, right? So thank you for bringing that up. I think it's very important and ties a lot of these pieces together, right? In terms of slowing down, finding grace, and these life transition moments as well that you help mm-hmm. people with. One thing I want to make sure we touch on, because you brought it up during your story, and I do think it's a really big piece of the life puzzle, is a higher power. And for me personally, I completely agree. Like, believing in something greater than myself has been one of the most invaluable lessons and learnings, but also motivators for the way I want to live my life and the person I want to be. It sounds like we may have a similar experience. And, you know, I'm in the Bible Belt even now, and having that kind of evangelical Christian upbringing, even if it's not in your home, it's all around you societally, and learning which pieces of that to keep, what to deconstruct, what works, what doesn't, keep what works and leave the rest, and how that can impact the way we view relationships, ourselves, the way we live our life. Tell me a little bit about how you define this something greater than yourself, and what your relationship with greater than yourself has turned into for you now.
It's a good one, Reese. Good, good, good.
Also, and, if we don't want to go there, we do not have to.
No, I'm happy to go there.
Okay.
I do not have an answer. Like, I mean, I have an answer for myself, which is what you're asking. So thank you. But it is the ultimate journey of my life, honestly, is, I mean, if we really like when, yeah, you know, if I remember like asking, is there a God, kind of when I was little, right? I mean, there's just so much there are so many layers to this. And I don't want to share too much detail of my upbringing to protect those that brought me up, but I had a variety. I had the rainbow of fruit flavors of influences around religion and non-religion. And I had, when I went through my teenage years, I shifted into this born again Christian, evangelical Christian camp, which really was in conflict with one of my parents. And the polarization that happened in that period of time. Now, granted, I was also a teenager who was going through teenage things and, you know, butting up against whatever I possibly could, you know, while also developing this, it wasn't even a foundation, but this influence of evangelical Christian. I'm just going to call it that because that language seems to be right with me. And
beautiful.
And then I also had a family member who was part of the tribe that raised me, who was a Baptist. So I did have this very strong Christian influence. And then I also had a family member who was not that and was more free spirited and what I label woo-woo-y. And so it's almost like I had to go through both extremes to land. And I haven't landed yet. But throughout my life journey, I will say both or all of those initial experiences created a foundation for me of faith. Mm. Like if we really take all of the dogma and the messaging and the, pardon the phrase, the bullshit out, like
yeah,
it's all faith. It's just faith. And I went through phases of, you know, being very, you know, Christianity is the only way. And this is, you know, quite judgmental in my thinking. And for those that I maybe have interacted with in the past and I harmed you in that way, I apologize. Like that was a phase of life that I needed to go through. But is not how I identify myself in associating myself with now. I went through a period where I shut it all off. And I made decisions in my life without faith and just do and brain and thought. And there were beautiful things that came out of that. And there were things that I needed my faith in that journey too. And I didn't have it or use it. I mean, I had it, but I never used it, you know, turned it on. And then I got to a point in my, probably in my late 30s, or, you know, ish, I don't know, late 30s, maybe early 40s. There is definitely a weird shift that happens around 40. Like, why am I here? Anyway, in the mix of that phase, I reconnected with faith and reconnected with a Christian-based religion, I guess, or church. But the people in it were way more open than I had ever experienced in previous Christian church communities. And I had a belief that if you didn't believe the Christian way, it wasn't Christian. And so in this new community that I started to be a part of, I got the beginnings of what I called my deconstruction, my religious deconstruction. And I think I'm at a point where I'm starting to reconstruct. I would say the last 15 years have been around this reconnecting with higher power genuinely, from my heart, from my soul, it being a real spiritual journey versus this religious journey. And in that I found my way of connecting with God, with higher power. I've even, like, I went through a phase of looking more into the feminine side of the Trinity? What does that look like? What is that? Why don't we talk about that? Where is that? You know, and kind of went a little extreme in that direction too. And today it's still in this phase of, I don't know if it's reconstructing. I feel pretty solid in my journey right now, but, I tend to lean on the inclusive side of life. I try, I don't always succeed, but in doing so, but why can't we all be part of the same community? We just practice it differently or have different language around it. Now, with that said, I do think extremism is violence and harmful in any religion or faith-based community. If you are harming people, and that could be with language, doesn't have to be physicality or exclusivity, that is not, in my opinion, healthy or safe. And if we're really, really breaking down what Christianity is, very not Jesus-y.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we could do like, I believe Jesus was here for the marginalized and for the people that needed love and support and care. I don't think Jesus was, existing to elevate the 1%, although God bless the 1%. Thank you for creating, wealth so that you can provide things. But, I struggle with dogma around religion and extremism. And I think our country is experiencing a Christian extremism that is unhealthy and violent.
So appreciate, one, your vulnerability in sharing that story. I think that conversations around God and higher power are arguably one of the most deeply personal things we can talk about, and is also like on the list of things that you don't talk about, right? It's like, you don't talk about finances, you don't talk about politics, you don't talk about religion. Mm-hmm. But I think it is so important because it informs so much of who we are and how we connect to other people. So thank you for sharing this. And I love, love, love this conversation. One, I just have to voice my agreement with your discourse around Jesus. It's like he was there, whether we believe that Bible is literal or a metaphor or somewhere in between. The archetype of Jesus is love, is for the marginalized, is for the oppressed, was marginalized and oppressed. And that is why he was such an important figure and why love prevails, right? In that. And I want to take what you were saying about this extremism being violence and offer a recommendation to our listeners. My mom actually introduced me to this documentary, and it's called God and Country. And it is based on a book that I'm forgetting the title of. I'll put it in the description of the video. So if any of the listeners want to check it out, they can check out the documentary and the book. But it is talking about, from a Christian perspective, the way that it is being malaligned with practices that are deeply unchristian and that are deeply harmful, violent, and detrimental to not just oppressed and marginalized groups, but us as a whole society, because we are a minority majority. And I deeply believe you hurt one person, you're hurting all of us, right? So I want to throw that out there as further research for anyone who is curious about this that you're talking about, with being careful about how we conduct organized religion. But I also want to return to this concept of language that you've brought up too, because I think that language and how we use it is so important in how we construct our faith systems and even the word faith. Like you hear someone say, well, I have faith, and I know my brain automatically jumps to, oh, well, they're a Christian. even though that's faith is not grounded in any specific religion or spirituality. Faith is a belief. It is belief in something without having seen it. And we all have faith in something. I believe even atheists have a faith that there is not a higher power. That is still faith to a certain extent. And
well, they have to have faith that there's air, and we can't see air.
Right? We can't see it. We cannot see it. But I think that the way we interact with that faith is just so telling about how we interact with ourselves and other people. One thing you also mentioned at the very beginning that I kind of want to get your two cents on, because I just am endlessly fascinated by this, is you said whatever language you want to use, God, goddess, universe, consciousness, awareness, right? Like all of these different things out there. What is your chosen word that you like to use for your higher power? Mm-hmm. And why have you landed on that?
So before I'm going to answer that, because I want to just acknowledge the God and Country documentary. I haven't seen it yet. And part of it, so thank you for reminding me. I go through these phases of, it's very simple. Again, back to what we do, like this restlessness or this excitement that I'll dive into something and then I'll be like, whoa, I need to like pause because.
Sure.
So I did a lot of like reviewing of documentaries and finding people that, you know, on Instagram that I'm listening to and trying to like, you know, part of my journey of deconstruct, reconstruct. And I got to a point where I was like, I just needed to pause the research side or the investigative totally. Because it was becoming, I felt trauma response happening. And I was like, I saw the title of that and I was like, nope, I'm not going to watch it. But now you've inspired me to go back to it and revisit it, especially after this conversation. Where I have landed, so I'm grounded in God. Like God is the language that I just, I go to. I go through, there are parts of me that feel bad about that. Mm. Because, and that's that, you know, there's something still I'm working through.
Sure.
Because I went through a phase where I was like, well, what if we read the Bible and we changed all the words to goddess and she? Mm. Wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah. And I never did it. But then I was like, ooh, let's ruffle some feathers around and see, like, what would that, like, what would the messaging and the religion look like if it were that? Or, you know, if we changed the language to some sort of neutral they, you know, which is very controversial in a lot of places. But by the way, God is neither he or she. They are they, you know. But we quote unquote, there's been some construct around the masculine being the powerful, the dominant. And so there was a period of time where I was like, oh, goddess. And then that didn't feel good either. Like that felt not comfortable for me. Not saying that's comfortable for somebody else, but for me, it was like, this doesn't feel comfortable either. Universe just felt impersonal. I use that one too for me. Like these are all for me.
And that's absolutely, that's what we're digging into. Yeah.
And I love it when people say universe for when they refer to it. And in some ways, universe is universal. Like it means whatever you choose. And I think at first that's how I viewed it. But then it for some reason, and I can't speak to it because I'm not thinking of it. But so at some point it just was like, this feels lofty, like so big. Like I needed for me a little bit more of a human attached to my God.
Yeah.
And so I've just landed in God. I've also have just accepted that, and maybe this is part of the conditioning that I experienced as a young person, like God is more male in my brain. In my brain. Like, and I struggle with that too sometimes because I don't believe God is he or she. Like, I just think God is God. But when I'm speaking in my prayer, that is the natural sort of image that I perceive, or that I'm or energy, because it's really not a figure, it's more of an energy,
right,
for me. And then I think I have to be okay with that. Like, that's lovely, you know, too. Like, well, that's lovely. There's this incredible male energy that you feel safe with. And how beautiful is that? My experience, I haven't always been safe with men. So, you know, like there is a comfort in my perception of the image of God is male. That does not mean that, you know, somebody else has this image of God as more feminine. Like, I think that's wonderful.
Right.
I do feel that God has both masculine and feminine. And I think we've forgotten the feminine, but that's just my opinion.
No,
that's another conversation.
Yeah.
Get into the patriarchy and all that stuff.
Right, and how that impacts all of us. I feel we could
talk for hours, I'm sure.
I know, I'm like endlessly.
If you use the patriarchy comment, I just wanted to say, patriarchy harms men and women, not just women.
That's right. 100%.
Again, other conversation.
Yeah, right. But let's highlight and underline there.
Yeah.
Endless questions that I would want to hear. But I do want to be mindful of your generosity of time and energy in this. And if, you know, having these conversations is a lot, right? So as we kind of head into the ending of our episode, first and foremost, is there anything else that you would like to add in light of what we've talked about? Is there something that you're like, let's go back to this real quick. I'd like to clarify this. I'd like to throw this out there. This is space for you to kind of whatever you feel called to share, if they're your space.
Nothing is jumping out. Like, we've colored the rainbow of conversation.
We have
all the colors in it. This has been really lovely, and
I'm so glad
I enjoyed this. Yeah, no, I feel fairly complete. I would say, and maybe this isn't really included, but I have found resources for a lot of these conversations or topics that we've dived into. And so if anybody is curious of what resources I've used on my journey, I'm happy to share.
Absolutely.
And that's not to say the resources are correct. It just means that these were things that helped me discern and unpack and learn and all that stuff. So
If you send those to me, that would be fabulous. And I'll list all of those out in the podcast description, episode description, wherever our listeners are listening or watching. You'll be able to find all of those resources down below, including the documentary we touched on briefly, as well as Coco Joy, Nicole's life coaching company that she is the owner of. If you would like to get in touch and work with her, that her information, her website, all of that beautiful stuff will also be down in the video description for anyone to access you and your beautiful work.
Thank you. I did think of something.
Oh, please.
So I don't know how we weave this in, but I sort of forgot a big part of the God journey was through energy work. So I experienced energy work. And by energy work, I mean, people kind of know this more as Reiki. And that seems to be the more familiar term, but there are different modalities of energy work, or body work is another kind of language that's around. So through that, I experienced a lot of healing, physical healing in things that I experienced, but also spiritual. And that helped me also reconnect to something greater than myself. And I eventually got trained in a few modalities as well. So I'm not a practitioner like on the table anymore, but it's something, you know, I feel like it had enhanced how to feel intuition and connect with something, whether, you know, it's something for somebody else or for myself. So I just wanted to throw that in there. And
you absolutely.
No, keep it.
Absolutely. Yes. No, thank you for adding that. And, I'll include some resources for energy work down below as well. It's also been really important to my journey. And there's an episode of the podcast with a Reiki energy healer. So if you would like a really easy resource, listeners, go check that out with Savvy Davidson. My last question for you, Nicole, just to really try it and put a bow on this beautiful, magical conversation that I'm feeling so grateful to have had. What is one word to describe how you're feeling right now?
Oh, that's easy. Joyful.
Joy.
Joyful. Right. Oh. We got to bring it full circle. No, you are a joy. I think I've said this too in our other work together, but like your energy is very joyful. Your smile, your questions, your commentary, your thoughtfulness. It's been really a joy to get to know you and work with you. So I feel really honored and blessed to have you in my life.
I mean, same across the board. I'm feeling so, so grateful. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your joy with me.
Thank you, Reese.
Thank you all so much for being here today, and a huge thank you to Nicole for her time and energy during this episode. I feel like I've kind of been on a roll with getting really profoundly beautiful guests, and Nicole is certainly one of those people. So leave us a comment down below with what you thought about this episode and what joy means to you. I would love to know. Again, if this is your first time here at the Cohere Collective, thank you so much for being here. Please leave us a like, comment, review, rating, and subscribe. All of these things are, again, the best way to support the work that we are doing. You can also head on over to www.thecoherecollective.com to learn more about the Cohere Collective and what it means to be a part of the collective and all of the cool things we're doing over there. We'd love to have you join us. If you are interested in Nicole and the rest of her work, you can absolutely find that in the description down below and follow her across social media and access all of her coaching services and other services down there as well. If you are interested in following me, you can do so down below as well. And to find the Cohere Collective, you can do so across all social media platforms, all at the Cohere Collective, wherever you are on social media. A big thank you to Nicole O'Striker for Making Meaning's art and podcast cover. You can find her on Instagram at Nicole O Creates and Nicole O Designs. And another big thank you to Tristan Morgan for Making Meaning's theme music. And you can find him on Instagram at Tristan Morgan. Right now, I am feeling rewired. Seems like kind of an odd word to pick, but I do feel like sometimes I am inspired to pick odd words simply for odd words' sake, but also because sometimes I feel odd, and odd words are the best way to describe that feeling of feeling odd. I think I'm both feeling rejuvenated in certain ways and rewired to kind of reprogram some of my brain to go after these new things feels accurate, but also wired in the sense of kind of feeling a little rambunctious right now and wanting to channel that chaotic but also energetic energy into something productive and exciting. Certainly how I'm feeling. Yeah. I think so. Well, as always, thank you all so very much for being here, and I hope you feel like you're living more coherently. Until next time, love.